In March of 2020, my partner and I were boarding a plane to Toronto, having spent a week visiting friends in Fort Myers, Florida. Our time there was good, though as a Canadian, afforded a certain distance from American politics, it was surreal suddenly being right in the middle of it, walking past Trump-Pence 2020 flags hanging from storefronts and luxury yachts docked in the harbor. After a week in Florida, I was ready to go home. The day before our flight, the World Health Organization declared the coronavirus a global pandemic. Even before leaving for Florida, I remember talks of the virus spreading in the news, people getting sick, their difficulty breathing, and expert opinions that we should steer clear of airports and large crowds. I remember asking my partner the day before we left, should we still go? During the trip, we didn't see anyone or anything that alerted us to the virus, except maybe some restaurant or diner that chose to put hand sanitizer out beside the soap dispensers in the washroom. The day we flew home, I remember seeing a woman on our flight, wearing a mask, one of those heavy KN95 things. I'd probably seen someone on a plane wear a mask before, but seeing it now made me feel uneasy. When we landed in Toronto that Thursday, I got a notification on my phone saying Broadway would be shutting down due to COVID-19. I had been reading about this possibility for days by then, but now it was actually happening. It was shocking, of course, but it also felt deeply personal. I worked in theater. Like, literally, my day job involved working for one of the biggest arts organizations in Toronto. And if people weren't allowed to come, would I still have a job? And as a performer and writer with my own gigs lined up, what would happen to those? Surely they wouldn't be canceled. On Friday afternoon, I got an email from work telling me to stay home. By the next day, all theaters in the city had canceled performances for the foreseeable future, and shortly thereafter, all my gigs were canceled as well. We ended up driving to a remote area north of the city. The quietness of downtown Toronto was eerie, and seeing several businesses in our neighborhood board up their storefronts gave us an uneasy feeling. We didn't know what would happen, though it was the beginning of imagining the worst. With nothing keeping us in the city, we decided to ride things out away from it. An option, by the way, I never took for granted. It wasn't all bad. For the first few days, we enjoyed the slower pace, sleeping in, cooking, sharing our favorite movies with one another. One night, I introduced my partner to Elaine Stritch at Liberty, and he introduced me, most appropriately, to my very first dirty martini. Some days, just to get out of the house, we'd go for walks along the country road we were staying. Once for a little fun, we split a flask of whiskey for our walk. Along with my dirty martinis, of which I had learned I liked filthy, I was drinking a lot by then. It helped calm my anxiety, at least for a little while. Sometimes on our walks, we'd come across neighbors of ours down the road, also looking to get out of the house. It was novel by then to see other people about, though we always kept a safe distance on the other side of the road. It was getting harder, keeping those anxieties at bay. Every time I looked at the news, my heart sank. Hospitals were overwhelmed, more people got sick, and the more we learned about the coronavirus, the more it seemed like things were only going to get worse. And often, they did. I remember a particularly bad day, seeing footage of bodies being transferred into refrigerator trucks outside of a hospital in Brooklyn, New York. I really needed to get off my phone, find something else to focus on, but anything I would have normally turned to, some creative outlet, suddenly didn't seem like an option anymore. I couldn't see people. The choir I sang with every week had gone remote, but it wasn't the same as singing together in person. At one point, I did one of those online Zoom concerts from home, but I always felt like I was just, well, performing alone in my room. I remember people posting these affirmations online, saying things like, "Now is the time to write that book, or that play you always wanted to write." But anything I'd been working on before the pandemic suddenly felt irrelevant. and with the future of live performances seeming bleaker than ever, writing anything for the theater seemed absurd. Gradually, I stopped writing in my notebook. I stopped making music. My partner noticed I wasn't singing around the house anymore. I just shut down, frozen. One night, while enjoying a particularly filthy, dirty martini, my partner and I were watching a Broadway documentary. Being a bit of a theater know-it-all and feeling particularly unencumbered by my vodka-tinged olive brine, I provided my partner with a steady stream of commentary, mentioning things I felt the documentary could have talked about or didn't explore enough. I remember him saying something like, "You should do one of these things yourself." I got to thinking about the YouTubers I followed, creators who made these documentaries about the recording or movie industry. What if I did that? For theater? Talk about the things I find interesting. Create something I would want to watch. Something I wish was out there. Of course, I had no idea how to make a YouTube video, but with nothing but time on my hands, I thought, what the hell? After starting a script, I opened GarageBand, took out my Apple earbuds, and started recording.
Okay, I haven't watched my first episode in a very long time. I don't know, we're just gonna see what I think after all this time.
In June 2004, the 58th Annual Tony Awards were hosted at Radio City Music Hall.
For my first episode, I decided to cover the Tony race between Wicked and Avenue Q. That was the first Broadway season I remember following as a teenager.
I do think that that slow-mo of Nathan Lane announcing that is probably one of my favorite things I've ever done on the channel. It just makes me laugh every single time.
Having edited many a self-tape audition for myself as an actor, I knew my way around the basics of iMovie, so I wasn't totally lost. I didn't really have a process yet, and sometimes watching my earlier episodes, you can kind of tell.
I just, like, I cringe because I can see little mistakes I make in the cuts of things, and whatever, you know, like, I recognize this and I still make some mistakes like this every now and then. I have no idea what I'm doing here.
I've heard artists often describe the Zen experience called flow when they get lost in the creation of their work. Thinking of me, hunched over my MacBook, trying to stretch the limits of iMovie, I wouldn't necessarily say I was experiencing flow making that first episode, but I was definitely absorbed in it, digging up old articles online and figuring out how to tell the story. I didn't have a clue what I was doing, and I didn't care. I have a memory of writing a list of ideas of what to call the channel, but I can't actually remember why I landed with Staged Right. Maybe the wordplay tickled me, the incongruity of the phrase, but I think it may have been as simple as no one had claimed it on YouTube yet. On April 28th, 2020, I published my very first episode of Staged Right. My initial audience was mainly friends and family. I think my mother is one of the first comments on the channel. Love you, Mom. Stuck at home, just like me, everyone cheered me on from a distance and encouraged me to keep going. In all honesty, I think the channel was a distraction for me, at least at first. It helped dull the anxiety, missing and worrying about my family, even just taking a break from the increasingly stressful news. Eventually, I managed to find remote employment, but I found myself still wanting to continue working on the channel. It was nice to escape the mundane, scouring YouTube for footage of Patti LuPone or Audra McDonald from early in their careers. Even in moments where I didn't know how to do something, I was starting to enjoy the process of figuring things out, the struggle of trying to do something visually, then turning to YouTube for a lesson on simple graphic animations in Keynote. With every episode, my audience grew. I was somehow always shocked when someone who wasn't a relative or knew me on Facebook had found my videos. I'd be flattered, puffed up with a positive comment, then rendered inconsolable when someone left me a disparaging one. In short, the comments section of YouTube would take some getting used to. Over time, I began to develop a process. I read more, regularly taking books out from the library. I began to interview people over Zoom, colleagues of mine when I felt I needed a perspective beyond my own. I still had no idea what I was doing. But my first guests, Amir Haidar, Vanessa Sears, and Romeo Candido, were gracious and very patient with me. Maybe because we were all stuck at home, others would be willing to talk with me as well. People like Michael Rubinoff, the lead producer of Come From Away, record producers Bill Rosenfield and Kurt Deutsch, even Paul Wontorek, the editor-in-chief of Broadway.com. These were people I revered, and I did my best to not come off overwhelmed or overexcited. I wanted to be taken seriously.
Pandemic and the road to reopening, Governor Cuomo just announced that Broadway shows will open September 14th and tickets will go on sale tomorrow at 100% capacity.
Eyewitnesses... In 2021, as the world began to, quote, return to normal, the theater world began its return as well. I became obsessed with the announcement of a Funny Girl revival, fascinated how this classic musical hadn't been seen on Broadway in nearly 60 years. I got my hands on any book I could find, and with my fancy new microphone in tow, began work on my Funny Girl episode. By the time I posted it, Staged Right had recently surpassed 1,000 subscribers, a huge achievement for me at the time. Thanks in part to the Funny Girl episode, that number would grow even larger. I can't really be sure, I can only guess here, but I think that episode might have struck a chord with people who watched it. Those who had grown up loving the movie or were longtime fans of Barbara Streisand. Maybe those curious about the upcoming revival or had thoughts about its casting. What I do know is that I had worked very hard on it, trying to get past the hyperbole surrounding Barbara and Fanny and wanting them to be seen as real people. Months later, when I reached out to actress Julie Benko for an interview, she told me that she'd watched the Funny Girl episode after learning she'd been cast as the Fanny Bryce standby on Broadway. That is one of many little pinch-me moments I have had while running the channel, and I have often wondered about just who has come across my episodes. Now, that being said, it seems inevitable that, along the way, mistakes get made. Sometimes it's just a mispronounced word, an awkward grammar moment, maybe a whole episode saying John O'Horgan when I really meant to say Tom O'Horgan. Seriously, don't ask me how, I have no idea. The worst offense, the most mortifying mistake I can think of, is sharing something that wasn't factually true. Just trust me here, even if a Tony Award-winning writer puts it in their memoir, it doesn't make it true. Through trial and error, I've tried to approach my subjects as even-handedly as I can, while also contending facts with emotions. Sometimes it works, and sometimes someone's still sounding off in the comments. Starting Staged Right was pretty much a coping mechanism for me, a way to stay connected with theater, I guess, at a time where everything had stopped or gone away. I really don't think I can stress enough that I started with no idea what I was doing and often had to figure things out as I went along. 4 years later, I've published 24 episodes and gained thousands of subscribers from people around the world. Maybe the best comment I can hope for is something as simple as, I really learned a lot from this episode, or thank you, or I can't wait for your next one. Theater is a great passion of mine. It is also an incredibly challenging passion to sustain. Now that we're all back and out in the world, I'm reminded pretty much daily the hardships of working in the entertainment industry. Through working on Staged Right, I have found a way to stay connected with the facets of theater that I love. My little coping mechanism has turned into an extension of my passion. And so long as I have it, and have the time, of course, I suspect Staged Right will continue to have a future. Thank you for listening. A podcast edition of Staged Right has been in the works for a while now. A chance to explore subjects in a different way than I do on YouTube. So while you can still expect videos exploring the history of musical theater, you'll also now be able to hear about it wherever you get your podcasts. You can find Staged Right on all social platforms. Let me know what you want to hear about and who you'd like to hear from. Stay tuned for more stories, more guests, and even more content at Staged Right.